Of all the wonders that I yet have heard, it seems to me most strange that men should fear seeing that death, a necessary end, will come when it will come. William Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, Act Two. I think we often spend a lot of time with Ebenezer Scrooge, telling ourselves, because this is what so many want us to believe, telling ourselves that Scrooge was afraid to die. But this morning, as we accompany Scrooge, as he is accompanied by the ghost of Christmas yet to come, the ghost of Christmas future, I want us to consider whether this is actually true, whether Scrooge is afraid to die. As I've been doing a lot, because I really want you to know the story beyond what you've seen in different theatrical versions, I want you to know the story as Dickens shared it with us. So here is your introduction to the ghost of Christmas yet to come. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which his spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its form, its face, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. But for this, it would have been difficult to detach its figure from the night and separate it from the darkness by which it was surrounded. Scrooge felt that it was tall and stately when it came beside him, and that its mysterious presence filled him with a solemn dread. He knew no more, for the spirit neither spoke nor moved. "I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come," said Scrooge. The spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand. "You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?" The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant in its folds, as if the spirit had inclined its head. That was the only answer. Although well used to ghostly company by this time, Scrooge feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him, and he found that he could hardly stand. The spirit paused a moment as observing his condition and giving him time to recover, but Scrooge was all the worse for this. It thrilled him with a vague, uncertain horror to know that behind the dusky shroud, there were ghostly eyes intently fixed upon him. "Ghost of the future," he exclaimed, "I fear you more than any specter I have seen, but as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?" It gave him no reply. Next, we find that we are in a seller of goods shop. And three people have just brought in a hodgepodge of belongings, a few cooking utensils, a few clothes, even some bed clothes. And they are bartering with the seller for these items. Scrooge is beginning to have an inkling of whose items these things might be. "Spirit," said Scrooge, shuddering from head to foot, I see. The case of this unhappy man about whom they speak could be my own. My life tends that way. Merciful heavens, what is this? He recoiled in terror, for the scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bed. A bare, uncurtained bed, on which beneath a ragged sheet there lay a something covered up, which, though it was silent, announced itself in awful language. The room was very dark, too dark to be observed with any accuracy, though Scrooge glanced round it in obedience to a secret impulse, anxious to know what kind of room it was. A pale light resting in the outer air fell straight upon the bed, and on it, plundered and bereft, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of a man. Scrooge glanced towards the phantom. Its steady hand was pointed to the head. The cover was so carelessly adjusted that the slightest raising of it, the motion of a finger upon Scrooge's part, would have disclosed the face. He thought of it, felt how easy it would be to do, and longed to do it, but had no power, no more power to withdraw the veil than to dismiss the specter at his side. Remember this scene in this bedroom as we move on now to a cemetery. A churchyard. Here, then, the wretched man whose name he had now to learn lay underneath the ground. It was a worthy place, walled in by houses, overrun by grass and weeds, the growth of vegetation's death, not life, choked up with too much burying. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge advanced towards it, trembling. The phantom was exactly as it had been, but he dreaded that he saw new meaning in its solemn shape. "Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point," said Scrooge, "answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of things that may be only?" And still the ghost pointed downward to the grave by which it stood. "Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead," said Scrooge. "But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge. Many choose to tell the story as if it is Scrooge's gravestone that he is afraid to look upon, but that's not it, is it? He is willing to look upon the name on the stone. What he can't bring himself to see is his own dead body in a silent, empty room, naked, unclothed, unmourned, unwatched, unwept for. That's what Scrooge can't stand to look upon. Not the headstone in the cemetery, but his own solitary, unwept for body. Of all the wonders that I yet have heard, it seems to me most strange that men should fear, seeing that death, a necessary end, will come when it will come. It's not so much death that many of us fear. For we understand that each day of our life moves us closer towards that day. But I think if we can get down to it, what terrifies many of us is, how did we die? Did we die alone, unwept for, uncared about? And here's the secret we need to learn. How we die is solely influenced by how we live. How do you want to be remembered? Now, those of you paying attention might think, why didn't she ask that question back with the ghost of Christmas past? How do you want to be remembered? Because when I ask you, how do you want to be remembered, I'm casting you forward into the future, but I'm asking you to think about what people in the future will think about something in the past. You. How do you want to be remembered? We will die. What will be remembered is how we live. Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead, said Scrooge. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Most of us are well set upon a path. And so I ask you today, while there's not a lot to distract you, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want your story to be? Because here's the wonderful thing about story. Unless things go dreadfully wrong, we each get to write our own story. I would hazard to say that every one of us listening to my voice will have the freedom to write your own story. No, you can't go back and edit any piece of it. And the moment that you finish each word, it belongs to the past. And no, the story you write probably won't be immortal like Dickens' Christmas Carol. The story that you write might not be one that people try to duplicate and rewrite and modernize, but it will be your story. And there is nothing more important than to be authentic in telling your story. We start now to write our stories, and we can lay aside the pencils and the erasers. They are no good. We can choose right now if we want to pick up a crayon, a calligraphy pen, maybe one of those old-fashioned quills that we can dip into some archaic inkwell and scrawl in inch-high letters across a page. However you choose to write it, make it unapologetically your story. Perhaps if you are sitting here this morning looking back on your story, you will feel that you haven't given enough attention to certain chapters in your life. What is it that you want people to remember? Is it acts of kindness? Is it how you showed up for them in their times of need? Is it how brave you were, not standing in the face of terrific danger, but how brave were you when it came time to make hard decisions? To quit a job that made you feel bad about yourself? To leave a relationship in which you were abused? It doesn't take a tremendous act of bravery, just courage to face your own life. And you don't need to be afraid when thinking about this. You do not need a ghost story to invite you to begin rewriting a different future. You don't need a ghost story because you have a nativity story. And here is hope for the future. You don't have a ghost to accompany you in your life, but you have the one whose birth we are moving closer and closer towards celebrating. Our scripture this morning, some of the most beautiful words that Jesus speaks, because when people hear these words, hundreds of years of tradition come forward, and they understand exactly what he is saying and who he is. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because the Lord has anointed me. He sent me to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to liberate the oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That's the one who will accompany you into your future. But we forget that all the time. When we contemplate our future, we very often think that we are going to do that alone. A book that probably many of you have read, or a movie you have seen, is The Shack. And one of my favorite scenes in that story is when Mac, the main character, who is a person who has been crushed by the most horrific event that you can imagine, Mac is out for a stroll with Jesus. And Jesus is expounding upon the human tendency to spend so much of our time living in an imagined future. And Jesus is telling Mac that we humans spend an inordinate amount of time focusing on our fears and then casting our fears into the future via our imaginations. The result, according to Jesus, is that we spend many precious hours not living in the present, but imagining that the evil that we fear will become reality, and then making plans and contingencies to avoid those fearful realities. Now let that soak in for a minute. Do you ever spend time imagining your greatest fears? Imagine them becoming reality. And then imagining all the ways you will suffer through those realities and how you will try to overcome them. Do you ever lose sleep imagining that you'll lose your job? Ever have a bad day imagining that the response to your proposal or your apology or your offer is going to be negative or downright demoralizing? Ever worry about any of these things? If you never project yourself into a future that's anything less than rosy, I would like for you to teach me how to do that. But back to the story. Here's the kicker. The problem, according to William P. Young in this book called The Shack, is not that we spend so much time in an imaginary future full of adversity. The problem, says Jesus to Mac, is that when we allow ourselves to dwell in an imagined future filled with adversity, we never imagine God with us. Even those of us who are quick to pray, willing to offer God thanks every day, and eager to seek God's presence day to day, often do not let God figure firmly in our future. We worry, we suffer, we struggle. We don't have ghosts to show us our mistakes, to show us the way, to show us the past, the present, the future, to be our guides. But we do have this Emmanuel, God with us, Jesus of Nazareth. God is with us today, yesterday, and tomorrow. God is with us, not magically taking away the pain, not magically taking away the things that make us afraid, but with us. With us. Even when Jesus was at the last, when he has been subjected to physical torment beyond our understanding. And he cries, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why does it feel so bad? He still utters those words aloud, knowing that the God who loves him is close enough to hear. When you consider your past, stop to think about where was God in that? Where was the blessing? Where was the presence of God that helped still your fears? When you think about your present, think about how do you want your faith to play an active part in your life? In the way that you respond to situations, in the way that you respond to people, in the way that you plan for your future. When you find yourself projecting yourself into that future, imagine yourself accompanied, not by the ghost of Christmas yet to come, but by the one who walked beside the Sea of Galilee and now walks beside you. Emmanuel, God is with us. Amen.